Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Preacher Boys podcast. I make this show for you, and I hope that you really enjoy it. I have a lot of people that ask me how they can support the show financially, and you can do that by heading over to patreon.com/preacherboys. You're going to get access to exclusive content, including early releases of episodes. I've got a couple episodes right now that have been released at least a month early over on Patreon. You've got access to things like unique merch, depending on what tier you join, and you get access to some behind the scenes content that I'm posting within the group. So head over to patreon.com/preacherboys and become a member over there today. Every single supporter helps make this show a little bit more possible, especially as I continue to add additional episodes and content every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the show.
Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. To find more information about the Preacher Boys podcast and upcoming documentary, visit PreacherBoysDoc.com or connect on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thank you so much for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you haven't heard my initial interview with Michael McNeely, just go back a few episodes and go ahead and check out that interview. It's really good, and I don't think either of us struggled with things to talk about. There was a lot of really good information in the episode, so be sure to check that out. But there was so much that we decided to do a second episode and talk about his experiences within the IFB, so I'm excited to have him on. Before we do that, I do just want to remind you guys that there is a Facebook group connected to the Preacher Boys podcast. So if you're not in the Preacher Boys official discussion group on Facebook, you're missing out on a lot of really good conversations that I think are helpful to a lot of people. So be sure to check that out, jump in, and I look forward to seeing you guys there. Michael, thanks for joining me on the show. Let's jump into the discussion. So,
hey, thanks for having me back again, Eric. Hopefully it'll be as good as the first one.
Yeah, hopefully. So what's been the feedback of the first one? Because I know I've gotten a ton of really good feedback in the Facebook group, through my DMs and stuff. Have you heard any feedback from the episode specifically? Or
I've heard a lot of good feedback. I got a lot of neutral, maybe is the better way of putting it, with some people where they're still big time in the IFB movement, but they also recognize that there are issues in the IFB movement.
Right.
And that was a blessing to hear from, you know, those people. I didn't really get a whole heck of a lot of negative. I got a few people that, you know, wanted to say their piece or, you know, try and debate it. But for the most part, hopefully it was good, thought provoking, because that's what it was meant to be.
Right.
The one thing I would say, you know, when people disagree or want to debate you, and you, in the midst of a discussion, they run out of, you know, their talking points, shall we call them.
Right.
They always resort to attacking the character.
Mm.
And that's when you can look at any, you know, societal issue or anything that's going on. Once a person starts, you know, losing the battle, they always have to go after the character, right? Oh, well, right. He's divorced, so don't listen to him. And that's a big IFB issue. Right. Well, don't listen to them because, you know, he's a divorced man, or he did, you know, something that, you know, we disagree with.
Exactly.
Right. And it's like, well, but is he wrong on the content of what he's saying? And I would say that, you know, for those that disagree, well, let's discuss where we disagree in those areas, and not attack character.
Well, I mean, man, I just had this. It's funny you're bringing this up, because I had just showed this to a couple of people, but I had posted a video just yesterday, and the initial response to my video. So the video is basically talking about, and maybe I'll just slip in an audio clip or something here to talk about it. But the video is basically talking about like how to deal with the emotional impact on me of listening to traumatic stories on a constant basis. Cause people are asking like, you know, how are you taking care of yourself processing all of these stories? That's been a common question. So I did a video about that and I got a response from a pastor saying, is there a support group for men of God targeted by a rabid pack of deranged feminists and sodomites who project their imaginary spiritual PTSD on complete strangers? So the response was not engaging with, you know, child abuse in the church. It wasn't engaging with, you know, any of the topics I'm covering. It was going after like, I guess if I don't even know if I have guests that would consider themselves feminist. I don't think that word's ever been said on the show, but even so, like, and then, you know, I've had a couple people that have attacked over, like, I've had guests on who are trans or gay. And it's like, does that discredit everything that they say about anything? if they said, you know, something positive, would you still disagree? So that was a big response, that I got. And then there was another video, and it's kind of relevant to this too. There was another video I just saw with a group of three pastors, and they were talking about people having a burr under their saddle, as far as like feeling that they were hurt or things like that. And they very quickly brushed past sexual abuse. And I think it's because they know that that's a bigger issue than they want to let on, but they went straight to like the idea of spiritual abuse not really being a thing that they've seen. He said, I've been in ministry for like 20 years. I've never seen it. And, and this blew my mind last night. So that's why it's fresh in my mind. So we talk about the Catholic Church all the time and the issue of abuse. We talk about, you know, it's systemic abuse in the Catholic Church. I don't know how many times I've heard pastors talk about the Catholic Church and abuse. And so the pastor on this podcast said, you know, hey, you know, the Catholic Church absolutely should be shut down. Systemic abuse, we know that. And then he said, you know, the IFB, I try to find 30 cases, maybe 50 cases, 150 cases. He's like, if you found 300 cases, that's 5% of the IFB. That's still not a systemic number of abuse.
Let me just real quickly, before we move to the last particular area that they seem to be screaming about, they say that independent Baptist churches in the area of abuse have systemic problems. Okay. Now, If you study, you know, the geographical evidence or how many churches we have, say, just in America, mm-hmm. somewhere between 3,000 and 3,500. I believe last episode I tagged it at 3,500. Mm-hmm. But for numbers' sake, I would say, let's just say use 3,000. Nice round number, okay? Mm-hmm. All right. Can you, for these people that are screaming a systemic problem in the independent fundamental Baptist churches, can you name 30 pastors and churches in scandal?
Okay. Wow.
If you can, you have named 1% of who we are.
Right.
Hang on a second now. Okay.
Say it again.
If you can name 30 pastors and churches in scandal, abuse scandal, whether it be sexual, physical, whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. you have successfully named that we have a 1% issue among independent fundamental Baptist churches. Now, to get to 5%, you now have to name 150 pastors or independent Baptist churches in scandal. Wow. And even at 5%, it's not systemic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, buddy.
And so what we've got here is you've got guys blowing a horn for no reason at all. Not that you shouldn't point out the egregiousness of some of the areas.
Right.
Of issue.
Oh, yeah.
Fine. Let's deal with it. We'll be on your side. We'll be blowing the horn with you.
Mm-hmm. But the problem is not systemic.
No.
And look, I understand the call to shut down the Catholic Church. It's a political machine from the top down.
Yeah, buddy.
It is absolutely infiltrated mm-hmm. with decades and decades.
Absolutely.
And we're not talking about 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. We're talking about parishes around the country. We're talking about them having to pay
tens of thousands of cases.
Now that is a systemic problem.
Yes,
all right.
Sir.
So I had a guest on last night who's actually a former IFB pastor. And he said, well, if you look at the stats, so like in the studies in the Catholic Church, 4% of priests are known abusers. He said, if you look at the IFB, and he said, I could name and write out, if I took time, 150 abusers. And I said, like, on my site, I have 150, I've got about 150 more to add. So there's about 300. I said, that's 5%. So the Catholic Church, if 4% of priests are abusers, the IFB, 5%. So statistically, in response to him, you're more likely to be abused in an IFB church than a Catholic church. And when he said that, I didn't hear anything for the last like 5 or 10 minutes of the interview, because I was just in my mind like, that can't be right. Like, and the minute I got my car like leaving, I started like writing. And I was like, he's right. Like, that's, it's just crazy the amount of branding that's been done against the Catholic Church. And I'm not saying the Catholic Church is a positive thing, their experiences with that stuff, but I will say, like, it's amazing that people accuse those who speak out of like trying to tear apart the church when the numbers do back up the information that's being shared. Like, to say someone's bitter, like, I'm sure you've gotten that response, like, well, you sound bitter.
Oh, yes.
You know, it's wild to me, because if it was any other organization, IFB preachers would get up and say, see, that's why you don't go to these churches. That's why you don't do this kind of stuff.
Well, isn't it a microcosm of where we're at in society? And I think I alluded to this in the last podcast of the fact that the problem we're having in society is that we're not listening to what the other people, however we want to categorize these different groups of people.
Yeah.
But we are so dismissive. And I did a video on my private Facebook page yesterday, and it was a plea to white conservative Christians, you know, with the pandemic or things that are going on with minorities. And it's just another group of people that want to be heard and want justice and are saying that these things are going on. But we, because it makes us uncomfortable, it makes us, you know, have to look in the mirror and do some soul searching, God forbid. The same people that want to use the fancy words of, you know, if we don't learn from history, history's bound to repeat itself. Well, here we are repeating ourselves again. Right. You know, how often do we have to have these riots for people to listen? Set aside your stigmas, set aside what you perceive of any group of people that has been misused, abused, whatever we want to call it, whether it's sexual abuse, whether it's minorities, whatever, you know, that's my plea to conservative Christians is, if you want to, as you say, make America great again, it's like a marriage relationship. We have to compromise.
Right.
Because both sides have very valid points.
Right.
Just because we don't agree with someone's point doesn't mean they're wrong. And here's the big problem with IFB. And I've noticed this, and I've said this a countless number of times to people. We were raised to believe that different was wrong. If somebody believes differently, they're wrong. If somebody dresses differently, they're wrong. If somebody has a guitar on stage, they're wrong. Right. If it's different than what, you know, the man of God says in this pulpit, it's wrong. No, it's not wrong. It's just different.
Right.
And that's, but we go through life now. Look at all the people that have come from, you know, these even evangelical churches. But more importantly, the IFB churches who are now closed-minded. I'm right.
Yeah.
You're wrong. You just need, you know, and then we're going to throw the God thing in there to kind of cover our hind end. And, you know, it's like the straw man theory, isn't it? Like, I'm going to invent this guy that I know and tell the story, but you can't debate the guy because you can't, the guy's not there to, you know, ask, is this really true? You know, and that's what they do. They throw it all under the heading of, you know, well, God loves all of his children equally and the same. And if you want him to look past your sins and iniquities, IFB people, then stop trying to cast rocks at those that are trying to be heard. Yeah. And I will say this to make a point on the original, you know, thing that you said with the Catholics. I've got a lot of Catholic friends here in San Diego. Some of the best people I've ever known.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you right now, I took a step back when that Pennsylvania thing happened with the sexual abuse in Pennsylvania with the priests. I took a step back and I go, you know what? You know, because I was going through it with my sister. And I, you know, I'm sure we'll get into that at some point. But how does this other denomination handle sexual abuse as parishioners, as members of it? What are the thoughts? And I remember we would sit there and I would just ask questions. How do you feel about this? What is your reaction? And man, without hesitation, we stand by the victims. If it was in San Diego, we would be arm in arm with the victims, storming the you know, cardinal or bishop or, you know, whoever's, you know, in charge of the Diocese of San Diego. We would be storming their office, demanding answers, demanding justice, because it's a blemish on us that this is happening. This isn't real Catholicism. And I'm telling you, they had town hall type meetings at the Catholic churches here where, you know, cardinals were coming in, high up in the Catholic Church were coming in and talking to parishioners, answering questions, and letting the voices be heard of the disgruntledness of, you know, the Catholic parish. And I'm going, oh my gosh, where is this in the independent fundamental Baptist world? Right. Why are we not? Because somehow we think that if we expose it or we allow, you know, this to get out, that it's going to hurt the name of God.
Right. Yeah.
And we've just devalued a child of God by doing that.
Right.
We've sacrificed a sexual abuse victim because we, whether out of pride or whether out of, you know, we're going to be embarrassed or we just don't want God's name. Well, what would God do in that situation? I guarantee you he'd put his arm around that victim and he would cater to them and not the abusers.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you mentioned that, like, and I'm so excited that, you know, especially having grown up near San Diego, like, it's encouraging to hear, like, at least the parish there has a sense of control over that stuff. And, but it's one of those things, like, I just don't see that happening. And look, it's the Southern Baptist Convention, any convention of any large size is going to have problems with abuse. Like, that's a conceit that you have to say, like, that's going to happen. Enough human beings in a room, someone's a bad guy. You know what I mean?
Yep.
The difference is, and this is where I didn't expect to have this conversation, but we're like, like I said, we have no problem thinking of things to discuss. There's plenty to go over. but you know, when I look at the Southern Baptist Convention, or I look at, you know, the Catholic Church even, you know, there's enough community among the different churches and enough established convention where, sure, like, there was when all of that went down with the Catholic Church, there was an entire, like, group of Catholic churches that were working together in a negative way. But there's also a ton of churches in these connected groups, like, and I'm so sorry if you're Catholic and listening that I'm not naming things correctly, but you know, there's entire parishes connected with each other that are also defending victims as well, and Southern Baptist Convention as well. There's a good chunk of the Southern Baptist Convention that's been incredibly complicit in protecting really dangerous guys like Paige Patterson and all of these different people. But there's also, because you have some kind of accountability, when that is discovered, there's action taken to move in and address it. Not always perfect action, and there's plenty of work to be done in a lot of denominations, but there's some action done. In the IFB Church, what I'm seeing is a lot of churches that stand together on issues of King James onlyism, of dress standards, of music standards, of talking bad about the Catholic Church, Southern Baptist churches, Presbyterians, Lutherans. But when it comes to abuse, it's a million, like, we scatter. They scatter like cockroaches in the sense of, you know, it's we're independent, so we don't have accountability. We don't hold each other accountable in this one area. And if you're going to choose an area to stand together, can we, like, admit that it should be protecting women and children? Like, that's literally what religion is defined as in the Bible, is protecting women and defenseless children. And so it's just bizarre to me that that's the area they choose to be independent. It's strange to me that, you know, I talked on the phone with Stacey Shiflett the other day, and, you know, I think he's very wary of what I'm doing, and I get that. But when we were talking, I was like, look, you made this huge stand against child abuse, and, you know, I want to believe that all the intent is good there, but where is everyone else? Like, why aren't other people? I said, well, I'm getting calls from pastors saying that they support what I'm doing. They just don't want to say anything publicly. And I'm like, doesn't that tell you something. Like, isn't it weird that you're accepting that as their response? It's bizarre to me. It's bizarre.
Well, I will say this, and
you got me fired up with your, I'm doing my Alex Jones over here. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely. This issue is, you know, hits home very close to me. And I will say this, what I have learned and why I'm speaking out, you know, on my private Facebook page about, you know, what's going on with minorities is because going through this with my sister the last couple of years, it's a passion of mine to get the voices heard of these groups of people that have been abused, that have been cast aside, because we want to, these independent fundamental Baptist pastors, and I got so many areas I could jump off in that you said, right. Man, but silence is a vote for the abuser. Let me say that loud and clear. And again, silence is a vote for the abuser. The same people that want to say, if you don't come out against it, you're condoning it. If you're not saying loud and proud that, you know, this behavior in rock music is wrong, then you're condoning it.
Right. Well,
where is that same standard when it comes to sexual abuse in the churches? Where is that same standard? And that's the problem we're having, is that, like you said, and I will take it a step further in my dealings and interactions and with the pastors, with my sister's situation, they went a step further and covered it up. They're, you know, and not nailing this to the wall like you do all the other sins is just as bad as a cover up. Actively covering it up.
Let me just pause there because I'm curious, and you've seen this firsthand, obviously, with someone who's very close to you, and you grew up. Like, if anybody should feel protected, it should be somebody at church. If anybody should feel an extra layer of protection, it's someone whose family is on staff at a church. So I have to ask, like, what is the mind, like, and I'm sure there's not even a good answer for this, but what do you see as the mindset that made it this issue that people choose to be so silent on? Why is it that they're willing to be a peculiar people about every topic except for, hey, we have a strong, strict stance of abuse? Like, it's bizarre to me.
Because it's a forbidden topic. I mean, you aren't taught the birds and the bees for the most part until, right. You know, you're given a book 2 weeks before until your wedding. And,
right. I was going to say, until you're married.
You know, so like a lot of, I've heard independent fundamental Baptist preachers say, if you use the word sex in regards to gender, it's wrong. Like, sex should never come out of the mouth. Sex, you know. And so we've made it this such a forbidden fruit, coupled with the fact that, let's be honest, guys, pastors, 4 years of seminary doesn't equip you to handle sexual abuse situations. You have zero clue as a house. And it's not something that they can see. And this goes into the mental illness side of things and their viewpoints of mental illness, where if I can't see the broken bone in my arm, then it's something that you just need to pray away. And I get so frustrated with, you know, my family who's like, oh, well, we just need to pray about this. Well, where's the action behind it? So let me ask this, you know, and I'll go, you went through cancer, family member, you went through cancer. Did you pray it away, or did you go to the doctor and get it, you know, chemotherapy? Oh, you went to the doctor and got chemotherapy. Well, then with mental illness, why are you so hell-bent against it? Why do you make these therapists out to be witch doctors when mental illness is an illness and it's real? And it's and it is, you want to talk about high amount of percentage of mental illness, it comes from the independent fundamental Baptist, because, you know, you're told you're not allowed to, you know, have sex before marriage. You're, you know, have to have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in between you, you know, but then, when young people let their bodies, their natural bodies, take over, and they fall into the sin, I'm using quotation marks, fall into sin, they become second-rate citizens. Look at how we were taught to view women in our independent fundamental Baptist church.
Yeah.
They pull all of these verses out that suit them, gloss over the rest, but pull all these verses out that the man is the authority, and then the man of God is the authority of the man. And, you know, we have this whole hierarchy, and here we are in this caste system. You got the children, the abused children, the rebellious children, and the women all way down here, and their voices aren't heard. And if they do try to step up, they get mocked. They get told that they're rebellious. They get labeled with certain things, and nobody wants that label. And so you're stuck in this environment that you're told is the norm, but it's not. And you just feel stuck. And that's when the mental illness starts, you know, happening with a lot of people, because you just can't handle this, especially as teenagers growing up in these things. You know, you're taking young, impressionable men and telling them, objectifying women, basically, is what we, you know, we're told to, you know, do. I'm not going to get into, you know, any of the gory details of, you know, how they would describe certain things. But, you know, I remember there was a men's only meeting called when I was, I believe I was in college at the time. It was a men's only meeting, and it was a big debate over, could a husband rape his wife? Is there rape inside of a marriage? And I'm just sitting there going, this is really uncomfortable and unnatural. But they came out and said, no, there's no such thing as that, because she is basically, she's the property of her husband. Well, and that's like,
yeah, that's crazy.
Goodness. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, but that's how we objectify people. And so to answer your question, they look at sexual abuse as under the category of sex. And, you know, yes, it's wrong. Yes, it's bad, but we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to bring it up, because then we're going to have to answer questions, and then we're going to have all the members, you know, and now we're talking about sex, and we can't have that happening. And so it's like, you know what, we're just going to, like we do everything else, sweep it under the carpet. We're going to send him off to another independent fundamental Baptist church, or we're going to, you know, because we don't want a black eye on taking him down to the police department and having him arrested. Right. And then we're going to go to the people, the abuse victims, and say, hey, we can't hurt the name of God, so let's just keep this, you know, between ourselves. And I've heard that story multiple times, and I'm sure you have too, you know, dealing with this situation. And so it's a topic they're not equipped to handle, and it's something that actually needs some action behind it and getting them some real therapy, that they don't believe in that kind of therapy. And so there's that's where we start to get into all of this as to why it's just easier for them ignore it and act like it's not even happening.
Right. Holy smokes. I should have said buckle up, because we're like blasting through. But I think that you're hitting some good stuff. Like, and one of the things you've kind of hinted at is the idea of like, oh man, I'm looking at the time. I'm like, man, we're going to go into episode 3 of this. No, I was going to say, you're hinting toward the idea of there being just a caste system, which I think is a really cool way to define it, because it kind of sums up what it is. So you've got like your obviously your preachers, you know, your preacher boys, you've royalty. Got your, yeah, royalty. You've got your, you know, the people who fall in line underneath them, who are like their second in command, like given all the responsibilities with none of the benefit. And then you've got, you know, the people underneath them who are like the faithful church members. And you've got like the bus kids way at the bottom. You've got, you know, all these different things, and women somewhere next to bus kids as being low on the totem pole. So I think one of the things, like, I don't even know if we're going to get to the Mexico trip on this, but it's one of the things that you brought up that I thought was interesting, is like, it really is, when you don't welcome other perspectives to the conversation, you develop viewpoints that are way skewed. So, you know, you mentioned the minority thing, like when a bunch of white guys, and again, I don't completely subscribe to the idea that, you know, white people can't speak into any topic that's not connected to white people, and vice versa, black people can. But I do think if a bunch of white people sit down and try to figure out the frustration of the African-American community, it's not going to be an easy task. Like, because you don't share the family history, the perspectives, like you have to welcome someone into the conversation who knows that experience personally. And the same for women. Like the reason one of the things I always talk about in the IFB movement is sexual repression and the views of women and how that is poised. Like, you're creating a culture of abuse when you say from the pulpit, women are subservient to men. Women are, you know, second class citizens. Women are to only be in charge of the home, or like take, when they say in charge of the home, cleaning the home, you know, mm-hmm. women are to be silent in the church. Women are to be all of these different things, taking verses wildly out of context to basically make women your maid that sleeps with you know? And when you don't have women in the conversation, the views that when like to have a closed meeting and say, can women, you know, be raped in the home? Maybe have some women in who can talk about the experience of that happening, you know, before you talk about is abuse a problem? Like, it's easy for three pastors to sit there and say, well, I haven't experienced abuse, so it's not a problem. Well, why don't you sit across from a victim and say abuse is not a problem? You know what I mean? And here's what I will say about the IFB world. And I think one of the big things that fuels abuse, and I've mentioned it before, you've got the teaching of what women are, which are just they're essentially objects. They're decor for the church, basically. That's pretty much their role, is to be seen, not heard. They hang out with, you know, the lowest of the low in the church. And again, not every independent church, but this is kind of the majority of within that movement. When you look at guys connected to these colleges and these big churches, that's how they were viewed. That's how Jack Hyles talked about women. That's how Jack Treber still talks about women. Bob Gray, like, it's still happening. So then you look at guys like this, then they're told not to talk about sex. So you've got guys getting into pornography, which violently objectifies women in a lot of cases.
Yep.
So between the mix of like fueling yourself on extremely violent images of sexual images with women, then you have a very low view of women as a person, as a human, to the point where they are objects for the man when they get married, which you kind of showed by that conversation. Like, no wonder there's an epidemic of rape and molestation and sexual abuse within this world, because you're not inviting women to the conversation.
Yeah. And you feel trapped when you get caught with the pornography, because you can't go get help from your parents or pastor, because they're going to look down on you. And now we talk about the caste system. Now you're down in the, you know, dregs of society, because you're viewed that way. And now take what you just said and apply it to all the different issues we're having in society right now. I mean, you brought up a great point, and it's what I said yesterday in my video and my plea to, you know, conservative America, you know, and Christians, is we get so hung up on the what that we forget to ask the question why.
Yeah.
We get so hung up on, and until we can get to the why and discuss the why this is happening, we are not
going to change.
We're going to repeat history. And that was my plea to anybody, is let's stop focusing. I think we can all agree what happened with the rioting and the murder is wrong. We can agree the what, but we're all focused on the what right now. We're all because you've got your Christian conservatives are saying, well, they're just feeding right into my stereotype of them. And then you've got this other side that says, hey, this is our voice. This is how you white people hear us. This is the only way you're going to hear, but we're not discussing the why. And it's the same with the churches that you're saying. Until we sit down and we have people who have gone through this and we start discussing the why, and this is where I fault IFB preachers who are reaching out to your friend and saying, we support you, but, you know, we don't want to. Why? You have no problem nailing the issue of pants on women to the wall. Why? What's worse, a pants on a woman or your daughter? But until it reaches us personally, it's easy for us to be lazy and just, you know what, I'm not going to do my homework and sit down and talk, because it's going to require me looking in that mirror and going, I was wrong.
Well,
I have to rethink some of these things.
Right. Well, you don't see a post about racism until it comes to a riot. And then you see a post saying, it's interesting you brought that up. And I already know there's going to be, because this is an issue. I did one episode where we talked about racism in the church, and I got the most like even from people who appreciated this talk about abuse, like they were like, racism, not an issue in the church. I was like, I don't know where you went to church. I think racism's a problem everywhere. And by being everywhere, it's also in the church. So I think it's fair to talk about. I didn't see it in my church as much at all. I mean, almost at all. I saw it in other churches. I saw it in, you know, with guest speakers sometimes. But it is a big issue in a lot of these churches. But what I will say is this, and you really hit on this, it's an interesting point, is that we don't worry about the conversation until it happens to us. And then we have to sit down. And again, like you said, what versus why is a huge one. Like, again, I don't condone looting and burning things down. And like, obviously, like, and I think the majority like would not agree with that. You know what I mean? But here's what I will say though. And same thing, there's people who leave the IFB who do things I feel like they handle some things wrongly in the way that they address the issues in the IFB, you know, people who do threaten violence, people who do all of that stuff. I say that is like, that's undisputably wrong. But what I will say is you have to look at why they are responding that way.
Yep.
The responsibility is on them for what they're doing. But it's funny. It was actually, this is such a me thing. It took a movie for me to understand this. But I remember I was watching Straight Outta Compton because I love, I'll get hate for that. I love rap. So I had to watch Straight Outta Compton. I'm like a huge rap fan. That's something that people don't know. So now you know that. So I was watching the movie and they deal with the Rodney King incident. And cause that was a big thing that happened. I mean, that was a huge part of the story. And that was I had always heard it mentioned, like the Rodney King riots. I'm 25. So I hear that thrown out and I don't have any, I wasn't conscious of that stuff at the time, obviously. And so, you know, I sit there and I would always hear it thrown out, but then watching the movie, understanding, because they really show that perspective, and then doing like my own, like watching news clips from the time, watching the stories from the time, I was thinking for the first time, like, okay, when I feel endangered or when I feel like my rights are being violated or I'm not safe, I go to the police. That's what I've always been taught to do. I go to the police and, you know, they bring justice. So then I'm watching the movie, I'm watching and reading some of this stuff, and I told my wife, I said, look, the Rodney King riots were not a good thing. Like, it was a bad, there was a lot of horrible, horrible things that happened at that time. But I said, you also have to look and say, if you spend decades and centuries of your family throughout history has not been able to go to the law for justice, what do you do to make your voice heard? And I told her, I said, I don't think that is the right answer, but if I was sitting in their shoes, I don't know what my response would be. Like,
I'm not going to fault them for the answer. That's
exactly.
I may not agree with their answer, but I'm also not going to fault them.
Man, I'm going to get so much hate on this episode. I already know. There's certain topics where I said this during the episode on race. I know that there's issues like this that people do not agree on. And again, people are going to, even though I just gave the context, I did a 7-minute disclaimer the last time I talked about this, and people still were like, misinterpreted what I said. So don't misinterpret me as saying it's right to do that. It's a right to, like, I've had people reach out that say like, man, I wish that place would burn to the ground. You know, so like big statements like that about churches. And look, don't go burn a church to the ground. Like, I'm not for that. I'm not endorsing that. I think that's terrible. But what is it eliciting that violent a reaction? And it's not just a thing that you wake up one day and say like, oh, I hate the church and I hate this. Like, it's an experience that you had.
They kneeled in silence in protest, and we did what? We shamed them for it.
Yeah.
And this country got divided over it. What is it that you want them to do that you're going to actually sit down at the table and lay aside all of your preconceived notions, come to it with an open heart and an open mind, and listen to their life experiences. Mm. And I'm telling you right now, I've got a man in my life that, African-American man, he's, very well known in the basketball world, and he's mentored me in my refereeing, career. I
represent LeBron James. He's a no, good friends no. with LeBron James.
No, the position he's in, I just don't want to jeopardize anything for him. But we've developed such a relationship and a friendship over the years. I almost look at him as a father figure because right now my father is not a part of my life. But, you know, he's been a father figure. And I'm telling you right now, I've heard stories of him and what his son goes through and what other people and then being around other, you know, African-American people and listen, their story. And these are successful people. Yeah. And listening to their stories changed my perspective because who am I to have such a strong opinion on something that I know nothing about or very little about? And what I do know is coming from the IFB mentality, the Christian mentality of the caste system. They're bus kids. Isn't that how we're talking?
It's inner city kids. Yeah.
Yes. And so, but they're still God's children and I am no better than they are. They're no better than I am. Yeah. We are all, and we're all in this together. And it just still dumbfounds me. And I ask this question all the time. Would you want to trade places with them and walk down the street and get harassed like they do? The answer is always going to be no. Yeah. Well, then why are we not speaking out about it? Because we know deep down inside, we have irrefutable evidence, all of this that has happened. But and I think we're on point here still because it's yet another part of society that is abused and doesn't have a voice. And so here we are in that power authority or that power position telling them what they should be doing, what they can't do, what they, you know, this is how you should act.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Who are we?
Yeah.
Who are we to have those kinds of opinions and you know, anyways.
But that's exactly, I feel super in sync with what you're saying. Like this is the kind of stuff.
That's my only plea on that. Discuss the why
and like sit there and think to yourself, like, again, that's a perfect example that you brought up. And I love that you're connecting these two things. I do think the reaction of people to this situation into the anger and outrage about abuse has been very similar. Is the idea that, okay, you said the example, and I love the clip. There's a clip that went around a long time ago. I don't know who the lady is. I don't know if I agree with her on anything else. But she just says that question, like, if you're sitting here and you would trade places with an African-American person that you know,
raise your hand.
Yeah, stand up.
Yep.
Nobody stands up.
I watched that last night.
Yeah, and that's so true. And I would change the question for this. If you're an IFB pastor, would you trade places with your wife? If you're a college student at an IFB school, would you want to be a girl at an IFB college? Because what are your options? Like, your options as a woman in the IFB is to be quiet. It's to go, like, if you go to Hiles Anderson, I think it's Hiles Anderson. I know there's several like this. There's classes for, like, how to do crockpot meals and how to be a secretary and how degrading is it that your future, you going to college to learn how to be a maid and a cook for a preacher boy, like that's such a, again, there's nothing wrong with those things. There's nothing. My wife loves, you know, working with our daughter and like, she loves being a housewife. She'll say it. She's like, I love getting to take care of my family. But if she said tomorrow, I want to go do this, she has my support to do that. But there's so many women in the IFB, and I hear their stories every single day of, I didn't have any options at all in the IFB. I didn't have any options of what to wear, what to say, who I wanted to marry in some cases. Like, it's crazy to me. So
and it boils and, like, and it festers inside of them for how many years?
Right. And then when they do get upset, which is normal, they say, oh, your wife is bitter.
Yes.
And again, it's the same thing.
Or they get out of the movement and they have the reaction that you're talking about earlier, burning out. I'm telling you right now, after dealing with my sister and her sexual abuse, man, I've had thoughts of wanting to burn down some churches, you know,
right.
I couldn't imagine because she was kept quiet for a decade and it's just all built up in there. And then when you're allowed to let it out, and especially for females, I'm sure it's, you know, a lot more emotional. when you do get to let it out, man, it's going to come out with a fury. It's going to come out with, and here's the one thing I would, you said it in a dream of mine, a thought I really want to get out there to family around the victims. You don't have to agree with them to support them. And I'll say it again. You don't have to agree with how they do things.
Yeah.
In order to support them, we can support them with and still disagree with them. Right. And it is so important that as family, as friends that surround these victims, to understand there are things that my sister did that I don't agree with, but she has 100% my support because I support her and her story. And for some reason in the IFB world, we can't, the two have to be together. If you have to do what I agree with in order to gain my support,
That's an abusive relationship.
Bingo.
That's the definition of abuse.
We're keeping the abuse going long after the abuse has happened.
Yeah.
By doing those types of things,
bro.
By silencing them, by telling them they can't tell their story, or, you know, we are perpetuating the abuse long after the abuse has happened, and that's the problem I have with the IFB world, the problem with people that want to silence or, you know, go after the character of a woman. Oh, well, and you know what, Eric, why is it always the woman when you got a boy and a girl in having sex before marriage, why is it always the girl, the woman sent to the boarding school?
They're the temptress, bro.
Oh my gosh. I was talking about this with some of my friends that grew up with the Fairhaven, you know, the other day about it. I was like, I don't understand. Like, but it comes back to the objectifying, and it comes back to, well, they were the ones that tempted the man to sin. Well, why aren't we talking about the man just as much as we are, you know, but it's an easy scapegoat. It's an easy, oh, get rid of the problem. Yeah. Ship them off, you know, and now, and then the labeling comes in, and now they're a drag in society.
Yeah.
And how does that make them feel?
Yeah, man, it's crazy. And I say that, I already said it, but it's blows my mind. When I have people on, like, look, I'm still in many ways an Orthodox Christian. And I would say theologically, I'm probably more Orthodox as far as church history than IFB churches are. And even though I know they would disagree with me on that, I would say I'm probably closer to what historical Christianity looks like on a theological level. But what I will say is this, like, it blows my mind when I have someone on who's an atheist, or when I have someone on who has any belief system outside of traditional IFB theology, I get people saying, that's a bridge too far. I'm unsubscribing. I'm not watching the show. I'm not going to listen to it. I can't, like, one guy left a review. It said, guess? Question mark. And it said, as a pastor, I was listening to the show until you decided to have, I think that was one. He said, until you decide to have a trans guest on. And it's like, so because you disagree with their sexual orientation, their entire story is completely discredited in your mind. Like, maybe that's why your churches are dying and shrinking.
that's what I said at the top of the podcast.
You have me seriously. I'm in my Young Turks, Alex Jones, Rush Limbaugh mode. You pushed all the right buttons today.
It's exactly what I said at the top of the thing, where they can't argue or debate or discuss. So they've got to discredit you somehow. So they're going to attack, oh, well, he's divorced, or, oh, well, he listens to that type of music, or he has a trans guy. Like, so that takes away from what the person is saying and goes back to what I said before. You're focused on the what and not on the why. And until we can move off of the what, and we can learn some things, you know what, I don't even agree with myself 100% of the time. How the heck am I supposed to expect other people to agree with me? You know,
right.
It's like, but I can, two ears, one mouth for a reason. Let's listen twice as much as we speak. And coming from somebody that, you know, shoots from the hip a lot of times, it's something that I'm trying to work on, but let's just try to glean something instead of going, oh, I'm not going to, hey, let's listen to it. And maybe they got a point or two that I can take and I can reflect on and mull over and be a better person for it. Yeah. Instead of, oh, well, they got nothing good to say because they're whatever sexual orientation. Last I checked, the Bible didn't really discriminate against sins. So, you know, right. if you're gonna, you know, he put the liars right next to the murderers, you know, in the Bible. So you want to gloss over certain things. Let's go back and read those and put them in proper context.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think the big takeaway being the what versus why kind of conversation. I think that is huge. And I think the reason that we can talk like this is I feel like we share a lot of personality traits as far as how we talk about things. And I relate to shooting from the hip. Like there's been things I've even done, you know, doing this show that I've said flippantly, or like, you know, I fall into sometimes, you know, I take, I love getting context because I know people are going to dump steaming piles of hate on me. but what I will say is this, I take this topic very seriously, and I don't think I should have to say that. I take this topic very, very seriously. I know people who've been affected by it. I've seen churches cover it up firsthand. It makes me sick to my stomach when I sit there and think about it. And the way that I cope with a lot of that stuff is by joking about certain things. Like I joke about situations that make me super uncomfortable. And so I joke a lot. So there's times that I'm super sarcastic through my Preacher Boys Twitter account where I shouldn't be as sarcastic as I am. Or there's times where I respond curtly in ways that I probably shouldn't. But you know what? Like there's also this thing of like, if we want to talk bitterness or anger, like I don't describe myself as bitter. And I honestly think I can say that truthfully. I don't find myself being bitter, but I am angry. And I always see IFB pastors get up and talk about compromise and talk about Bible colleges and talk about fill in all the millions of issues we've mentioned that get screamed about at every conference you go to. But then I sit there and think like they call that righteous anger. But the one topic that I think people should have righteous anger about is getting swept under the rug. And so what I'm not going to do, and what I'm going to say now to anybody who's watching this, and man, you really have pushed my buttons today, so I might have to stay away from my Twitter today. No, but the one thing I am going to say is I'm not going to sit here and say, I feel really bad. I feel really bad that I hurt a pastor's feelings for calling out abuse. If me calling out abuse hurts your feelings, hurts your church, hurts your ministry, or hurts your faith, then you have a really weak ministry, really weak faith, and you've got some questions to ask yourself about why this topic is the one that really stirs you up, because it should make you really upset that this is happening in your church or your ministry.
They don't like a taste of their own medicine. Have we not seen this during this COVID-19 thing where this whole pandemic of they're being told by a superior power what to do, and that they couldn't meet, and they're given directives by the government. And how many of those IFB pastors did not like a single solitary element of it and took to the pulpit and took to their Twitter and took to their social media platforms and bashed the government and turned around and did the same exact thing to their people.
Crying out for liberty.
Like, wait a minute. And I think I put it on your Preacher Boys thing. Yeah. It's, you know, kind of like a humorous thing of they didn't like a taste of their own medicine.
Yeah.
And in this, when they do it, it's righteous anger. When we do it, it's bitterness. It's, you know, it's like, well, wait a minute. Aren't we doing the same things? Aren't we crying out and trying to give a voice to those that you've cast aside? And that's why I said at the end of the last podcast, they check the boxes more of Pharisee than they do Christianity. That's the sad part of where we're at.
I don't care. I've said this over and over and over again, and I don't. There are pages and accounts and things that make fun of silly. Look, there's a lot of silly stuff that I could talk about in the IFB. There's a lot of, I've talked to my dad. My dad still works. He's going to hate that I give him a shout out. My dad still works in the IFB. I have a great relationship with my dad, great relationship with my mom. Like openly, they know what I'm doing. We talk about it. They disagree with some phrasing of things that I say, but they understand what I'm talking about. They see the issues I'm talking about. But what I will say is this with the IFB, I don't devote my time. I think there's time and a place. I think stuff fundies like, I think all of these, you know, IFB sermon clips, like I talked to the guy that runs that pretty or girl. I don't know because he's anonymous, but I honestly have no idea who it is. I've tried to get them to say, but
I've been talking to him too.
So I keep saying, like I'll say something and they'll say a location. I'm like, so you live near there? As I'm trying to get closer, but no, like I think there's a time and a place for the funny yes. memes and stuff, but like I've stayed away from that stuff because honestly, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter to me if you want to wear a suit, if you want to go to church 3 times a week. I think that's excessive to have to drag your kid 3 times. I don't know how people do it 1 time sometimes. I think going, if you want to go Saturday and knock on doors, like a little weird. I don't think a lot of people culturally like that now, but again, I don't care if you do that. I don't care if you use an organ. I don't care if you don't want to use a guitar. I don't care. All of that stuff does not matter to me. Be as IFB as you want. But take a stand on abuse. And again, going into the why is it happening over and over and over again? And if you're not willing to have a conversation with yourself and say, you know, hey, is it something that I'm preaching that opens up an environment like this? Is it the way that we view women that's leading to abuse? Is it the way that we're teaching parents to talk about their kids? Like, if you're not going to sit there and have that conversation with yourself, like, you shouldn't be pastoring a church of people who are vulnerable to abuse. That's just not like, that's where I draw the line.
Yeah. The IFB churches are the perfect breeding ground for molesters and for people that want to come in because,
or abuse of any kind.
You're absolutely right. I pigeonholed it to that, but any abuse of any kind, it's the perfect breeding grounds because they're more worried about, you know, what the outside world is going to think of their church. So they're not going to be vocal about it. They're not going to, you know, take a strong stand. They're not talking about it. You know, and it's the perfect scenario for them. And that's why we're having such, because it's like, you know, for every one that comes to the surface, there's 10 more that haven't seen the light of day.
Yeah.
And so that number, that percentage that you mentioned earlier, that's scratching the surface. Well, that's the tip of the iceberg. What about all those that haven't come out yet?
Yeah.
And it happened to.
Dude, the stat that blew my mind was on Kelly Palfi's episode, Dr. Kelly Palfi, and she talked about the fact that when they sat down with, you know, a ton of different buy her book, Men Too, and you can read it, but it was 400 plus abusers they sat down with, child molesters. And on average, they had 150 victims each. And like, I sat there and told her, like, I said on the interview, because I had read the book and like in my brain, I read it as one guy had 150 victims. And so on the show, you can hear me, like, literally, I said, yeah, and it's crazy, like, one guy had as many as 150 victims. She said, no, not one guy, the average. And like, when she said that, it was like, I started thinking and I was like, okay, so for every case that's not been reported for 20 years, 30 years, or, you know, how many victims could some of these guys have? How many, for every time that a pastor moves someone to another church, how many new victims are they taking on? And again, maybe there are some cases where it's just the one, but I find it really hard to believe that someone does something that drastically evil and then never does it again. Or it's a one-off, yeah. Or it gets treated like it's an oops thing. Like with David Hiles, like the dude did stuff in every church he was at and it was always, oops, let's try a different place. Oops, let's try a different place. And it's like, no, it's not an oops. It's like, that's the definition of systemic abuse, is moving people around, expecting a different result and allowing other people to be endangered by an abuser. That's the biggest argument that I have with the church that I grew up in. And again, this is the stuff where when people say I'm doing this for any other reason that I'm upset about it is like, I don't want to talk about the church I grew up in because that's where I'm going to get the most hate. Every time I get a message from someone from there saying, hey, I'd love to catch up or I'd like to talk to you about your show. It's that's scary for me. Like, and you know, but here's what I will say. The guy that first burst my bubble that abuse can happen in churches is still starting off the live streams at the church I grew up in. He's still leading the music at the church I grew up in. And I don't understand. I'll never understand. I love my parents. I have utmost respect for them. but I never understand how you stay at a church that platforms an abuser in a public way. I don't understand. And again, I'll say that to their face. I say it every time that I go down and see them. I say that all the time. I'm not just saying that because I'm on a podcast or because I built a wall around myself. And like, that is a real thing that needs to be addressed. And you should be able to ask people that.
Well, and no, absolutely. I'm right there with you because I've been going through the last few years with my sister, and I don't think we have, you know, a ton of time to delve into it. But I will say this. My sister's abuser is the children's church pastor. Like, how in the world? And the pastor has known for a decade, denied the fact that he was called the children's church pastor, denied it all over the place. No, it's not true. It's not true. And then when my sister's, you know, case got dropped, first live stream after the case got dropped, looks right in the camera and says, our children's church pastor, and then introduces, you know, the abuser.
That's wild.
I mean, and what goes into, he didn't, you know, and oh, by the way, let's not forget to mention that in all of these states, you pastors are mandated reporters.
Yeah. Yeah. Legally.
Let's not forget
that. Even if
that.
You don't legally, have any moral credibility, your legal responsibility.
You are legally obligated when you know you are supposed to report it. And, you know, he's my, you know, my sister and, you know, that whole situation. Nope. He knew. And he's like, well, he's reformed now. Oh, okay. He's reformed. Okay. Why are you putting him in charge of children? And that was my question to him. Why are you putting him in charge of children?
If
he did it to a child.
If a church, I've said this before, if a church treasurer was stealing money, restore them. You're never going to put them in charge of money again.
Yeah.
That's going to be a boundary you set. And every pastor watching this, I know that there's people watching this. I know you would say, if I just totally isolated from the show, someone said, hey, my treasurer was stealing money, but you know, they've repented, they've confessed, you know, we're working with them. We're thinking about putting them in charge of all of our finances again. Every pastor would say, I don't think that's a wise decision. That's at the kindest, most charitable way they would say it. I don't think that's a wise decision. They'd probably say it's a stupid decision. If I say to a pastor and say, man, he was at another church, abused a child, and he's really, you know, he's done some counseling, we're ready to put him back. Why is there not that same pushback to say, maybe it's not smart to have him at your high school football game or at your preschooler, you know, event or filming at youth activities or A, B, C, D, E, F, G, like all these different things. How come it's like, oh, they're restored, let's put them back? It doesn't make any, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me that you would do that because you wouldn't do it in any other area of your church. There's no other thing that I can imagine where that gets brushed off so easily and quickly.
Well, and this is where they're losing a lot of credibility from you, myself, you know, a lot of people out there that are leaving in Master Roses because you, when you're so vocal about everything and have to have an opinion on everything, you set yourself up for a hypocritical stance because there's going to come a point in time, like you're talking about, where you're going to have a chance to step up, but it doesn't suit your narrative or it doesn't, it's going to fly in the face of what you've been saying all along.
No.
So you're just going to go silent on it. And I'm going to say it again. Silence condones abuse. Silence and not preaching out about it, whether it's abusive relationships, you know, within a marriage, whether it's sexual abuse, whether it's the abuse to minorities, whatever it is in society, if we don't get out there and aren't vocal about it and saying this is wrong and giving a voice to those that are not being heard, then we are condoning it.
Right.
And that is my challenge to all the pastors. And don't get up on Sunday morning and I don't want to hear all of your pro-life stances when it comes to abortions if you're not going to be pro-life when it comes to minorities in this country. So if you're not going to start preaching against all the sins equally, then you need to step down from the pulpit, your bully pulpit, and you need to start educating yourself and learning about all this and start having discussions, not debates. We do way too much debates, discussions, and I challenge the pastors, go out and find a you know, some minorities to come in and talk about racism. Don't talk about it yourself. Have some minorities come in and talk about racism. Have sexual abuse victims come in and talk about what they've gone through.
That'd be huge. Yeah.
We would start seeing a change. Drastic change. I don't think they want change, to be honest with you, Eric. I think it's just easier for them to be lazy and go, you know what? The issue isn't touching me. I'm not going to discuss. I'm going to be silent on it. But hey, I'm going to hit the DMs of the guy who is doing it in support.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's coward. I mean, I'll just wrap up by saying, you know, and again, we could talk for hours, and next time in California, I think we just got to get together in person if all this stuff is passed. And,
absolutely.
But I'll just say this. If you're going to just sit there and you said it, silence is a vote for the abuser. If you're going to sit there and watch and like support from afar, or make, if you're a pastor and you're going to, if you're a pastor and you're going to get up in front of your congregation and blast on everybody about there being pedophiles in other churches, but you're not going to take a stand for a specific victim, and you're not going to specifically give a platform for people to speak out, you're still being complicit in abuse. I'm seeing these podcasts, I'm seeing people tweet, I'm seeing all this stuff where they're going out and saying, I adamantly oppose child abuse. But then when it comes time for an actual victim to speak out and they need the support of someone who's in that world, I don't see them saying, hey, here's a tweet on behalf of this person. Here's a live video with this abuser. Here's a podcast about abuse victims from a pastoral perspective. I don't see any of that stuff happening. All of it is grandstanding and saving face about their ministry, saying, also, yeah, I stand against racism, abuse, women being, you know, objectified, all that stuff. But in practice, you're doing all the exact same stuff, and you're being a coward. You don't want to call out the people who are in your sphere of influence. You don't want to call out the people who were your mentors. Look, there's a way to do it. And if you calling out abuse, again, if you calling out abuse hurts your church, hurts the people you affiliate with, hurts the pastors that you respect and look up to, find different people to look up to and respect. Like, if that's the issue that you're worried about, you're in the wrong movement. And if you think that taking a stand about abuse is going to mean you're not invited to speak at Jack Treber's church for a conference, maybe that tells you something. Like,
check your Christianity. Go back exactly. And reread the Bible. Where did Jesus go when he hit a city? It wasn't the synagogue.
Right.
It was the abused victims that he went and ministered to. And isn't that what a real pastor, a real clergyman is supposed to do, is get into the, you know, get down with these victims and help them up and get into the mud with them?
Yeah.
Instead, we just push their head further down so that we don't have to do it. And it's, you said it very beautifully. And I will just add to, you know, what you said is that they want to feel good about themselves and convince themselves that they are taking a stand and that they are against racism by just vocally saying, I'm against it. That doesn't mean it. And aren't these the same people who get up and say, actions speak louder than words?
Right.
Well, here, this is your chance. This is your opportunity in society with all these current event issues to take a step back, to stop trying to point out the what and discuss the why. Mm. And I think our churches would be better for it. Our people would be better for it. We would start seeing changes, and our country would be way better off. I've said this before. History is written by the conquerors. History is written by those who conquered, and they're going to gloss over the things, how they did it.
Yeah.
Us admitting there's racism isn't going to make us any less of a country. Us admitting racism is not going to take away from wanting to make a change. Is not going to take away from the hard work that I do for my family and our ancestors have done. It doesn't take away from any of that. For some reason, we feel like if we admit there's racism, well then, you know, it takes away the glimmer of this great country. No, this is a great country.
Mm.
This is an awesome country. This is a country that is unlike any other in history.
Yeah.
But we still have to address the scars and discuss the scars. And until we can do that, we're going to repeat this cycle.
Well, talking about the bad does not negate any of the good. Like, it does not the fact that you're unwilling to talk about the bad makes everything else come into question. You know, there's a really great song. Again, I don't know why rap is coming up in this conversation, but I love I love this. Right. There's a rapper named Propaganda, and his songs are made like check him out. It's awesome. I wish I could just plug him into the show and just play a couple songs, but he has a song called Precious Puritans, and he basically, the song is about it's about Reformed. It's not even about IFB. It's about IFB rap would be awesome, but it's about it's about Reformed pastors always quoting the Puritans as like they were the godliest of people. And he talks about, from an African-American perspective, sitting in, or any minority's perspective, sitting in a pew and hearing a pastor lovingly quote Puritans, when he's thinking back and saying like, these were people that said that you could own people. You know, he talks about like, why didn't the amazing insights that they received directly from God tell them you can't own people, you know? And at the very end of the song, he has a lyric, which I think is so, I think it kind of speaks to exactly this. And it's, you know, he basically says, I guess God really can use crooked sticks to draw straight lines. And so look, every church, every organization, every person is going to have problems. And that doesn't mean that everything in the entire thing should be shut down, it means look at where things are a little crooked. Look at the things that have been done and look at what you've done in spite of those things, but address those issues. Like, it doesn't mean that when someone calls out abuse in the church, like, I have people who listen to the show who are hardcore IFB in every way except for this area. And they, you know, I think there are some things in IFB theology that lend themselves to this kind of stuff. But again, you have to look back, like, you just have to look at it and say, like, why are we not going to address this issue? Like, if,
well, isn't it the very definition of being a better person?
Yeah,
isn't right. that what we have to do in order to be better, is stop dwelling on everything that we do is good and identify our weaknesses and yeah. work on those weaknesses? Isn't that the very definition of being better? So if you want a better church, if you want to be a better person, a better pastor, a better, you know, member of society,
that's being a Christian.
Aren't we supposed to identify our weaknesses and work on them?
Right. That's being a Christian. Like, it's yes. renewing your mind daily. Like, what are the thought processes that are getting me into trouble? What are the ways of believing that are getting me in trouble? And it's, yeah, I mean, again, we could talk about this forever, but I really do just want people to sit there and think, like, why is this the issue? And I know the number of downloads the show gets versus the number of people who interact with public comments. I know there's a lot of people in the IP that listen to the show. Like, I see you. I know you're there. So, like, just please, I'm not asking you to stop wearing suits and listen to Chris Tomlin and like whatever. I don't care. I don't listen to Chris Tomlin. I listen to rap. So, but you know, I'm not asking you to do that stuff. But what I am asking is look and ask, why is this the issue that pastors are silent? Like, that's the big takeaway, is like, why is this the issue? Why is it that what's crazy is like me, I'm joking about the rap thing. Like, I'm not joking about loving it. I do love it, but I'm joking about bringing it up like that. But what's crazy to me is there's pastors who would use that to discredit what I'm saying about abuse.
Yep.
Like, oh, absolutely. I know that for a fact. Like, there's people who would say, well, he listens to this music that glorifies this, this, and this. And it's like, honestly, I don't even listen to the words most of the time. I just like a sick beat when I drive down the road. But it's like, but it really is. Like, it's crazy that that's something that people could use to discredit. You know what I mean? But anyway, I'm sorry that we have to end another one of these, because I could, like, seriously, we could do like a 24-hour telethon with one of these conversations. But I appreciate you coming on and sharing your perspective. And seriously, we need to get together in person. And set aside like a weekend retreat to just talk. but I really appreciate you coming on and sharing. And, you know, I just appreciate the perspectives. I think you're bringing up a lot of really relevant stuff. And I think it does speak to kind of the nature of, you know, suppressing the voices of those who are, you know, considered less than.
Absolutely.
So awesome. Well, thank you so much. guys, definitely connect with the Preach Boys discussion group on Facebook. Like, I know Michael's in there, I'm in there. You know, let's discuss things, talk about this stuff. And again, like, if you're, I'll just say this again, if you're in the IFB world and you're like, you have a concern about how things are being addressed, or you disagree, like, send me a message. Like, I've hopped on the phone with people, and I won't say their names because I've had people reach out and say, don't say my name. Like, I go to IFB college or this, like, just give me a call. Like, I'm more than happy to dialogue with you. Like, if you're an IFB pastor and you think that I'm just like trying to destroy your, like, let's hop on the phone and actually talk about it. Like, I'll gladly do that. You know, like, shoot me a message. We'll get on the calendar. We'll talk about it and we can discuss it, because I do see this as a huge issue. I'm not going after you for any other reason. I'm not even going after you. If you feel like I'm going after you, then ask why you feel like, why is this the thing where it makes you feel so attacked? So yeah, feel free to reach out to me. I know, like, in the group, there's plenty of people who'd be willing to share their perspectives as well. But anyway, I appreciate you talking about this. I'm really excited to put this episode out, and also terrified because I know there's gonna be a lot of people who, you know, are going to be upset about a lot of different things, but I think it's
we got to be uncomfortable in order to make change.
Right. Right. Amen. So, but yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. That's awesome. So, yeah, thanks again for doing that and for coming on for a second episode and maybe someday a third. We'll see what happens. But I really do, like, there's certain people I talk to that I just feel like, you know, that instant, like, our minds connected. And I feel that way definitely when we talk. So I appreciate that.
Awesome. Yeah. Love to do it again. Thanks, Eric. Cool.
Awesome. Oh, man.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes and don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Additional information can always be found on PreacherBoysDoc.com.
Save big money on plant protection supplies now at Menards. Defend your garden with Triazicide Insect Killer. Its fast-acting formula protects lawns, vegetables, and many other plants. It kills more than 260 insects by contact, above and below ground. Choose from ready to spray, concentrate, or granular. Save big money on Triazicide Insect Killer at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at HereYouAreAZ.com.